Hey, folks.
Hello.
My name is Ellen Adair.
And I am Eric Gildy.
And welcome to Take Me Into the Ballgame.
Yeah.
In an effort to bring the entire Take Me Into the Ballgame project into one feed, we are going to be releasing our old episodes on PitcherList week by week.
Yes. Enjoy for the first time or revisit an old favorite.
And so now, this is one of them. Folks.
Hi.
And welcome to Take Me Into the Ballgame.
Take me into the ballgame.
Yeah, I'll take you.
Yeah, do it.
I won't take somebody else. I'm going to take you.
Yeah, I'm the one to take into the ballgame.
Yes, that is Eric Gildy.
Yes, hi.
And I am Ellen Adair.
Hi.
And thank you for that excellent Ellen Adair impression. And
branching out.
We are two actors who starved for real Major League Baseball. Although we do appreciate the KBO, have been watching baseball movies and subsequently decided to grade them on the 20 to 80 scouting scale that is used for baseball prospects.
You got it.
So if you are not familiar with this scale and you're just joining us for the first time, first of all, welcome. Thank you. Second of all, what you should know is that 50 is an average productive major league player. So as we're very much reminded in the film that we are going to be talking about today, it's hard to make it to the major leagues, and that's actually a good thing to be a 50. But 60, 70, and 80 are progressively better and better and better.
And 80 is like, whoa, like Hall of Fame, like best of the best of the best.
That is exactly what it says on MLB.com. And as you might guess, 40, 30, 20 are very bad.
Yeah. And then below that is us.
Is us. Yes. Yes. Then you reach the Ellen and Eric ability to.
Yeah. Deep in the core of the earth, one of the lower circles of Dante's baseball scoring system.
I like to think I have a minus five arm. Anyway, the film that we are going to be talking about today is the 2009 film Sugar.
Sugar.
Azúcar.
Oh.
I speak no Spanish, by the way.
Do-do-do-do. Honey, honey. Oh, my God. Yes. It is a movie that I did not know really much about, again, until, like, pretty recently. Did you know about this movie?
I did know about this movie.
Why didn't you tell me about this movie?
All I knew is I had seen the trailer and thought, oh, that looks great.
Yeah.
But that's my experience with a lot of movies.
I mean, I guess to be fair, this movie did come out in 2008. And
ooh,
at that time...
Fact check on Ellen Adair. I just said 2009, but I can never remember numbers. So.
Well, you were caught up with the Phillies in 2008. And so...
I mean, I was pretty caught up with the Phillies in 2009,
too, that's
fair.
True. That's true. So I was maybe a little less... Well, no, I definitely was a little less active in my baseball fandom in 2008. So I can understand how this maybe would have, like, gone under the radar for me at the time. But, you know, like, that was enough time ago that I'm surprised that it hasn't come up, this film, in other conversations. Because... you know, we will get into it, but wow, what an amazing film.
This movie is so amazing, you guys.
Yeah.
And I just want to be clear that our aim is that our podcast can be listened to and enjoyed even if you haven't seen the film. And in the case of a film like Ed, which we talked about last week, like maybe our podcast is a healthy alternative to watching the movie.
Or like a chaser to watching the movie at the very least.
One or the other. So I'm never going to tell anyone that they need to watch the movie before they listen to the podcast because you should live your life. But I can't think of a baseball movie that I have seen in my life that I would more strongly recommend watching before you listen to a podcast, before you get any spoilers, just because of the nature of its arc. So we're going to be spoiling the heck out of this movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And this is one that if it were me, I would want a friend to tell me, watch this one first. But I'm a strong advocate of doing whatever pleases you most, especially in a low stakes, like movie watching, podcast listening realm. So do what you want to do.
So Sugar is about a Dominican pitching prospect who is trying to climb the ranks of a fictional Kansas City team, the Kansas City Knights, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
And so it begins with him at one of these kind of academies in the Dominican Republic and follows him as he goes to America to play some minor league ball and all of the challenges that he faces professionally and personally over the course of that particular journey. So it's really a baseball movie, but at least as much, it's really an immigrant story.
Yeah, that was actually one of my major takeaways from watching the movie, was that absolutely there's a lot of baseball in it. We're going to get to it. But that I think fundamentally it's a story about, you know, fighting for a more prosperous life in which you can also have a community. Yeah. So I think that that is fundamentally an immigrant story. And I mean, immigrants are my favorite part of what makes America, America. So I love that aspect of this movie so much.
Same, same. So this was written and directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. They collaborate all the time and are best known for their work together on Half Nelson, which came out right before this. This, of course, it's kind of a funny story, Mississippi Grind, and worked together on Captain Marvel also. And they had been reading about Dominican ballplayers and sort of the fact of how high a percentage relative to population size Dominican players are in the league, how like proportionally they represent such a huge amount when the Dominican Republic is a pretty small country. And they started interviewing people, started doing some research, and the story, the movie, just kind of developed out of that. I read an interview where they said that they sort of started writing it before they even knew that it was definitely going to be their next project, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. I did. I watched a few interviews of them talking about this movie because it's so good. And I was just really fascinated by the whole process. And it was interesting for me to learn that Ryan is the big baseball fan. He's actually an A's fan.
Okay, okay.
And I am totally coincidentally wearing my Matt Chapman shirt today, so go A's.
And I'm wearing a minor league hat tonight. Go Fightin' Phils.
Yeah.
So
go Red and Fightin' Phils.
We're representing different sides of this in our baseball attire right now.
Indeed. And that Anna has like pretty competent Spanish. So really they were like the dream team to make this particular project happen.
Yeah. And a ton of this movie is in Spanish and subtitled, which is great.
Yeah.
I feel like there is a level of, I mean, we'll get to it, but a level of authenticity that it just sort of like helps bring to everything that you're experiencing and is so crucial to the story that's being told.
Completely. Yeah. This sort of the language barrier, I feel like, is a large part of the movie and of the storytelling.
And so they also were interested in not just an immigrant story, not just a baseball story, but also the story of how these young, poor players can kind of get caught up in the machine that is professional baseball. Mm. And sometimes they get kind of chewed up and spit out by it. I don't know if you came across this in the research, but our star of this film is a guy named Algenis Perez Soto, who played amateur baseball for several years in the Dominican Republic. He wasn't a pitcher. He was shortstop and second base was where he was at. Yeah, absolutely. And he was discovered playing baseball by Anna and Ryan, and they liked him and interviewed him for the role. I think they interviewed hundreds of people mm-hmm. for this and ended up doing it. I don't think he had had really any acting experience before, which makes me so mad because he's so good.
He's so good. He's just a natural is what he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that they had started by actually going to the baseball academies and trying to find somebody that way. And then they just weren't able to find the right person.
Right.
And
right.
So they sort of branched out to just, you know, finding other people playing ball around the neighborhood. And at this point, I think he'd sort of given up on his dreams of becoming a major league player.
Yeah, I think that he was working like as a front desk clerk in a hotel or something. He was getting work where he could, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel ready to push forward if you do, unless there's something else you want to mention before we get into the categories.
No, let's get started. Our first tool that we are going to grade is Amount of Baseball.
I have such a crush on this film, and I'm very nervous about my scores with this. I put 70, and I'm wondering, there's part of me that thinks that's too low based on my scoring that is weighted by quality. I think there is quite a bit of baseball in this, and I think it's really good. I think it's really got an exceptional eye to detail. I think that you... Is 75 a score that is acceptable?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I'm going to go 72 then in that case.
No, that's also not a score that's acceptable.
Okay, 73 is my score on Amount of Baseball. Well, the thing about it is, which is why I'm like 70, but gosh, can I edge it up even a little bit, is I think that there's really good baseball, and I feel like it's baseball that really gives a sense of like the ebb and flow of the game. You get like interesting moments of the pitchers coming out. You see between innings stuff at the minor league games. Like, it just felt like it had a good sense of the flow of the game, that when we were in the game, it just felt very real and satisfying to me.
Yeah, well, and we don't need to talk too much about this, but I differ in the way that I score this a little bit. I do slightly consider how good is the baseball when we see it, but a lot of that also goes to baseball accuracy. So when I'm scoring Amount of Baseball, I'm more just scoring how much baseball is there in this movie.
Oh, she's winding up for a lower score than mine, I can tell.
It's a little lower, but what's hard is there is so much nutritious baseball in this movie that at one point I thought while watching it, are we looking at 80 grade Amount of Baseball?
Yeah, I toyed with that idea, I'll be honest.
But for me, sadly, no. So the movie just does not keep up its torrid Amount of Baseball pace. It's like 2019 Josh Bell. Like, to be clear, the movie is exceptional throughout, but Amount of Baseball-wise, it hits like 12 homers in May and then 2 in September. But Josh Bell had a good overall season. He just got injured. So my score is 60.
Okay. You know, I think one of the things that makes me want to go higher also is that since this movie, so much of it is about the type of journey and the sorts of obstacles that this type of player has in their attempt to get to the major league, some of the non-baseball scenes still sort of felt like baseball scenes, because I was like, oh man, like, look at what these guys have to deal with, and look at like various issues with communication gap and isolation and all of that. There were some of them that still sort of felt like baseball, because I felt like I was being shown what a player has to deal with while they're also trying to not just keep up with, but grow within their game. It's so hard. Oh my God.
Oh my God,
I wrote that down so many times in my notes.
So hard. And I agree with you. I think that there's a lot in the sort of whatever it is, first 75% of the movie. There are a lot of scenes that are not strictly on a baseball field that nevertheless feel baseball adjacent enough that they sort of feel like they add to the Amount of Baseball category. But the fact that he leaves baseball and goes to New York, that whole section is sort of Amount of Baseball less. For me, in terms of...
For a while. Yeah.
Yes, until the very end. So let's move along to our next category.
Let's do.
Which is baseball accuracy. And I have seen the limit of my scouting knowledge, and it is this movie. As far as I can tell, this is 80 grade baseball
accuracy. I put down
accuracy.
80 also.
Like, if there are mistakes, I didn't see them, maybe through my tears. So I know that they heavily researched this movie by going to the Dominican Republic, and
you can really feel that.
You can feel that so much.
Yeah, it's so well observed.
Like, I learned in one of those interviews that the guy who's teaching them English via baseball terms is the actual guy.
Oh, wow.
That's actually him. Those are actually, like, the lessons, you know, saying line drive.
Line drive.
Fly ball.
Fly baseball. Yeah. Oh, God.
So I don't know what it is like at a Dominican baseball academy, but it feels real, not just movie plausible. And I mean, everything in this movie feels so intensely real, and I don't want to get into storytelling too much, but I didn't really see anything that caught my eye as false baseball-wise. Like, if I had played in the minor leagues, maybe then there'd be something that I could pick out, or maybe if I were just a smarter, more observant person. But as a sort of a couch and keyboard participant in the baseball world, there wasn't anything that I didn't buy. So I know I'm just going to fax the score in, like, Jim. I assume I'm faxing it into Jim. I don't know why, but this
That's
is
good.
What
yeah,
I think of this tool, and you got to get someone else in here to verify.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. There were like moments, particularly at the beginning, and the ways in which the camp functioned that I got a little bit confused, because I'm not entirely sure of like the really, really granular distinctions between the academies that are in the Dominican Republic versus the team camps that are there and any further training that mm-hmm. happens mm-hmm. once a team signs a player that still happens in the Dominican Republic. And I'm sure that there are people, maybe even people who are listening, that could really isolate certain things within that that are not 100% accurate, but I feel like the overall sense of it just seems like dead on, even if like slightly abridged. And I think that continues with like even just non-baseball stuff, like the feel of that community that Sugar goes back to, where like you see the community that he's in, you see the kids like celebrating him, you mm-hmm. see mm-hmm. the family that's relying on him. And that yeah. is a story that is told so many times. And there are a number of like baseball documentaries about Dominican players. And
we decided to watch one to sort of like give ourselves a little bit more context about this.
And it really carried over. It was a documentary from around the same time too,
yeah,
I think.
Which was interesting. We watched Ball Player Pelotero. Again, apologies for my bad I don't speak Spanish pronunciation.
Yeah, which is definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, also would recommend watching. It's pretty short. It's just a little bit over an hour, and it talks about, amongst other things, the signing of Miguel Sano. So that was an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And the communities and the way that people are interacting, the relationships within that documentary were like exactly like what we saw in yeah. Sugar, I thought.
Yeah, no, I felt exactly the same. And then I just felt like there's so much just baseball stuff. The baseball that I do know, I felt like this film just represented really accurately. And so thank you so much to Ryan Fleck for his baseball fandom being very rigorous. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having a beautiful curveball with the correct curveball grip. I mean, it's not an Arenola curveball or anything, but it is an eminently plausible curveball. Like, it has this crazy 12-6 movement that just kind of dives back to earth right through the strike zone. And it looks very slow, but that's not a complaint. Like, for a movie, I loved it. I love that we could see him working on it while he's in class at the yeah. academy. And then I love that...
Oh, I've got more to say about that, but I'll wait till storytelling.
When he comes home, his mom is like, a spike curve? What's that? Like, anyone who is choosing to listen to this podcast can probably relate to this with someone in their life. Like, spouting baseball stuff and that person being like, what are you talking about? Although, for the record, my mom is awesomely smart about baseball in addition to being awesomely smart about a lot of other things.
This is true. One thing that I loved also when you bring up the spike curve, I love, and so much of the movie is about this. This is like, I think, outdoes the intentions of Eight Men Out in some ways, in terms of like wanting to create an unsentimental baseball story.
Oh my God,
like there's
so
a lot of sentiment in it, but like I love
there's
that,
feeling in it,
yeah,
not sentiment.
That's true. Yeah. What I'm interested in, I guess, is that I love how the movie, like, we're rooting for Sugar, but he's never really portrayed as this like hero that will get the eventual victory at the end. Like, I love that he learns the spiked curve, and the first time he throws it, like, it's awful. I love that it's something that he continues working on. I love that in that moment that you just described, where he talks about it to his mom, and then he's like going to show off in the community,
and then
he throws
it
and he hits the guy. Yeah. I think that while not being, strictly speaking, like baseball accuracy, it feels like it is in a certain way, in terms of this is just true to life and how it is. This isn't like a superhero movie with like a baseball like skin put over it.
Yeah.
It's like real people and the real struggles. And all of this is so, so hard. And it doesn't try to make it look easy ever, even for the good players.
Yeah, this is exactly the next thing that I was going to say, is that I just love that it's not easy for him initially. And I feel like a similar sort of storytelling point is when he comes up and he has his first game, and he doesn't have any control. Like, yeah, he can't find the strike zone.
4-pitch walk on the first batter.
Exactly. And it's just like, yeah, that would happen. And then his friend Jorge comes and talks him down, and he remembers that he's a good pitcher and he just needs to execute his pitches. But yeah, like, the portrayal of the struggle feels A, so real, and B, such a much more interesting story to tell.
So much more interesting. Yeah. And like, also, I'm just going to say right now, I'm going to use baseball accuracy for sugar to say, God bless any movie that has like a pretty good understanding of how the minor league system works.
Oh my God. Yes.
Because like, that just doesn't seem to be the case, whether or not people care or interested or like, for whatever reason. I feel like a lot of movies that we have watched for this podcast, and also just not for this podcast, for whatever reason, seem to have like a very bizarro, weird understanding of how the minor league system works. And this one, again, I thought had like such an amazing, like, it would be almost unbeatable in terms of movies that I know, if that were like a category in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah. I actually can't think of another movie where I feel like the minor leagues are portrayed pretty accurately.
Yeah. And both what it's structurally, and also just what the experience of it is for people.
Yeah. And I think that, and storytelling is just going to bleed into this category a little bit, and that's fine, because we're probably going to talk about storytelling for like 2 hours. But I think that the movie does such a good job of laying out for somebody who might not know about the minor league system, how it works. You get it a few times. A few times people are like, remember, first you have to go to this step, and then you have to go to this step, and then you have to go to this step. And there are guys, everybody above you is hoping that you stay down, and everybody below you is trying to vie for your spot.
Yeah.
And I just felt like,
you're getting information and drama.
You're getting information and drama. And I feel like the film does such a good job of laying it out without ever making it dumb for the people who already know.
Yeah, it never really feels like exposition.
It never feels like exposition. And I'm just insanely impressed by that. And also, I really admire that I think the film just really doesn't play dumb with any of the baseball stuff.
Yeah.
So it doesn't like go out of its way to explain baseball, because I think maybe two things. They thought, well, if you're watching this, you might be a baseball fan. But also, that's just the mise en scène.
Exactly.
Because what's going on for these people is so clear. And that's the only thing that's important in a story. And it's sort of, it's a personal pet peeve of mine when people think that every single little thing needs to be explained, when it's really just texture for the world.
Yeah. So filming did happen. I'm just going to throw this into accuracy. There was plenty of filming in the Dominican Republic, as well as Arizona, as well as Iowa, which is the single A team that Sugar ends up on. The team that he plays for is the single A version of this Kansas City Knights, that is a team called the Bridgetown Swing. They filmed that section of the movie in Davenport, Iowa, where the Houston Astros have a single A team, the Quad Cities River Bandits. So you will see, if you watch the movie or if you have watched the movie, there's this beautiful stadium with a bridge in the background, and that's the Mississippi River. And so that is an actual stadium, and they were just able to use it despite there like clearly being some licensing issues with the story for having like a fictional team mm-hmm. to begin with. This is not it happens every spring, like licensing issues.
Yeah.
This is a movie that is managing to tell about as authentic a baseball story as you can imagine without having like trademarked jerseys.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good point. And there was not a single moment when it bothered me that it that we weren't seeing the official Kansas City Royals jerseys or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the same.
And part of it is that, you know, just from my experience of going to minor league games, it seemed so authentic. I took the note that was something like, this is the correct level of engagement of a minor league crowd.
Yeah, and they cut to like silliness happening between innings, like fans dancing and like all of the stuff that you see. There's a moment where Sugar is called in to the manager's office and the manager is like, hey, wait, I need to talk to you about an accountant. And it's like the guy who's the mascot.
Yeah.
And all of it just felt so right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's that moment when those stupid guys yell, you suck, Santos, from the stands, which is a real issue, folks. Thank you so much for addressing this, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck.
Have you read my pamphlet?
Have you read my pamphlet? I feel very strongly about how you suck is inferior cheering, and this is why I developed my entire Ellen Adair method of cheering, was to combat the you suck Santoses of the world.
Yeah, because really general, vague, and sometimes inaccurate cheering is really just you cheering against yourself.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Another thing that I want to go ahead and put in baseball accuracy is that it felt to me like also the most accurate depiction I had ever seen of being a baseball player.
Yeah.
This sort of actual like claustrophobia of being on the mound. And the way that they told that so well with the shots, there's this one shot where it's so tight on him and you can tell he gives up contact and he's running to home plate to cover the base, presumably. But then you see somebody out of focus go by and you know that he's given up another run, but you don't see any of that. You just see him. It's just like on his experience.
Totally.
And then in the game where he's taken the drugs, he gives up some kind of, it could be a homer, it could be an extra base hit. You don't know because the filmmakers never show you. You just see him sort of like bending down on the mound, all of these positions of pitcher dismay that we're used to seeing, but we're used to seeing it sort of like in gameplay, but just staying on him. The utter misery of it is so palpable.
Yeah. And the loneliness that you feel after that happens.
The loneliness.
And you're just there on the mound by yourself. Yep.
Yeah.
Totally
and then,
agree.
And then, you know, some other moments sort of after it's his final start, I guess, where he gives up some runs. And then his friend / rival Salvador goes to pitch instead. And he just puts a towel over his head.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that.
He can't watch.
Yeah.
And then he's demoted to the bullpen. And the shot of him being in the bullpen versus you've gotten so used to him getting to sit in the dugout with everybody else. Oh,
yeah.
Heartbreaking. Ugh. So on that note, let's move along to our next tool, which is storytelling.
I kind of want to go 80 on this.
Yeah, it's an 80. It's an 80.
It's so good and it's so layered. And I think it manages to tell a lot of stories simultaneously, and all of them are told really well. I think that the sequence when the title of the movie comes in is like such a great example of that, because you've been seeing some play, you see the classroom repeating phrases like Ellen and I did earlier, and it's all like things that you would expect to hear like at a meeting, I think is what the dry erase board says. And the camera like slowly goes in on Sugar and he's focused on the ball. He's focused on that spike curve, while the other kids are still saying these phrases. And those phrases are like, I want to give you a chance and it's up to you and I'll do my best. And this is like such a great way of kind of almost subconsciously like putting in these themes, planting these themes into our brains, like before we even really know what the story is going to be. And on top of that, we see the focus of Sugar on the game. But then on top of that, we see him not paying attention in English class, which proves to be an obstacle for him throughout the movie, like understanding other people. And like that fuels his loneliness throughout the film. And then when he ends up in New York later on, which we'll talk about, one of the things that's joyous and like relieving about that to him is that he's suddenly surrounded by people that he can have like a regular conversation with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think there's just everything to praise in this movie. And yeah. Like,
oh, that was like 10 seconds that I was just describing right
basically
now.
Basically nothing to criticize, but a couple of threads in storytelling that are interrelated and are just exceptional. So fundamentally, this film just feels so, so real.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't been to the Dominican Republic, but the way it shows Arizona and Iowa and New York, it completely reflects what I feel to be the reality of those places.
Yeah.
So
I am from Iowa. Again, like I feel like I need to disclose this. It would be unfair if I did not share this information right up front. I am from Iowa, so but those are my people.
It doesn't mean that you have to recuse yourself from this. In fact, it means that you bring more to bear as to judging whether or not the Iowans are like Iowans.
I have like a little to say about that, but please continue the point that you were making.
What I was thinking about was there's this beautiful thread that shows through the movie of the camera looking out of a car or a bus window.
Yeah.
At whatever kind of landscape, rural or urban, is on the other side. And just the carefully selected reality, it's as sharp as a knife.
Yeah.
So when you see Arizona and you see the sort of like strip malls, you're like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That is Arizona. That is America. And when you see the Arizona motel, you are like, that is an Arizona motel. And when you see the Iowa church, you were like, that is a real church, like not a
movie
church.
Yes.
That is a real Iowa church. And I just...
And the choir is singing at the exact amount of level of good that you would expect from a church choir in that size community.
100%. Yeah. No, I wrote the note at some point, I want to worship the location director. Like, it's just, it's so good. But it's not just the locations, as Eric mentioned, it's the whole thing. It's the way that the choir sings. My personal favorite Iowa feature was when they were all sitting around eating, and one of the characters really is deeply invested in whether or not Miguel likes the meatloaf.
Oh my God,
meatloaf.
It's so good.
And I was like, just like, it's so Iowa.
It's so Iowa. I took the same note and that like exchange that happens of like, well, he doesn't understand any English. Well, I just want to know if he likes it. Yeah, like, exactly. It's so perfect.
It's so perfect. It's like just all of the people in this movie, they feel so real. Like the absolute both glory and cringeworthiness of people behaving exactly as I could possibly imagine them behaving.
100%. And real quick, one of the reasons that the filmmakers chose Iowa is because they were looking for something that would be the most, I guess, different, the most, you know, like Iowa does not have the most diverse demographics, particularly in most places where like there's going to be small town developmental baseball. Des Moines is like a different story, but that's a AAA town. And so that's part of the reason why you get Iowa as one of the main locations here. But there was part of me that wondered if there was like some statement or if I'm just reading too much into this, where like, is this like a response to Field of Dreams of, is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. And when Sugar first gets called up to single A after spring training, he sees his
such
name and he says, like, ¿dónde está Ia? Because he's reading that he's going to Bridgetown, Iowa, and he just reads Ia as a place, the IA postal code. And like, ¿dónde está Ia? Feels like such a good like response to,
is this heaven?
No, it's Iowa. And I think that like his experience there in like kind of bears that out a little bit.
Another human moment that felt so true to me, although that's like every single moment in this film, is when Salvador shows up from the DR and he's immediately like, he plays it a little sheepish, but basically he's immediately at ease and like joshing with everybody on the bus. And
oh yeah,
who cannot relate to that moment of having your cool friend show up at the party and suddenly be so much cooler than you could ever imagine?
Yeah, and it like isn't even like worried or thinking about it, just effortlessly just taking all the cool.
Effortlessly cool. And I mean, I guess the 80 grade cool friends amongst us cannot relate to that, but like, yes. I mean, he's been depicted as someone who will work in his little carpentry project during his own party, so I feel you.
Yeah, no, I feel that, you. Oh, man. I think that what they do with Sal is so cool. The way that his story is woven into this movie, mm-hmm. because he's there from the very beginning.
Yeah.
They're in a cafeteria. I think it might even be before the sort of like title card appears, where they're in the cafeteria and they're making fun of like Sugar for a second because he's put on 20 pounds in the off season. They're like joshing around like, oh, it's 20 pounds of muscle. Oh, no, you're all bone, blah, 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 blah. And then they make a reference to this guy sort of like sitting in the corner and eating a lot. And they're like, oh, God, like he eats a ton. And Sugar stands up for him and says something along the lines of like, if you hustled as much as he did, you'd be hungry too. Mm-hmm. And that's Sal. And like, he's a pretty important character in this movie, but he's just kind of like introduced. There's another moment, like not that long after that, where they're at a practice and some of the players are doing like a running drill and Sal is like in the front of the pack. They don't draw a lot of attention mm-hmm. to it, but he's just there working harder than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that kind of attention to detail is present throughout the whole movie. I'm sure that there are things, I mean, I've watched it twice now, and I'm sure that there would be more things that I would pick up on a third viewing because they really, really pack in a lot of careful detail in so many of the shots.
I feel like I could write a dissertation on the sort of storyline threads set up by this movie because,
oh my God,
that's
yeah.
how exceptional it is. And part of what makes it exceptional is that it does place things just very carefully so that if we're really paying attention, we'll remember later, oh, right. But also it will place things that will create an expectation that it then subverts. So like I think about that early scene where Sugar is swearing to his girlfriend that he's going to come back and get her. And what anybody who has ever watched a movie before in their life knows is that this is not going to happen. And we assume...
Watch a movie, girl!
It's going to be because he finds like a pretty American
girl. You don't know
girl,
what's coming.
And they're going to teach each other's languages and like eat snow cones or something.
Oh, and the movie totally plays with that expectation.
And then he does sort of develop this crush on this American girl, but she's both like delicately and awkwardly and truthfully rebuffs him and nothing comes of it.
And she's into him too.
She's just like, I think super religious.
She's just committed to other things more than her like interest in him. Yeah.
And then later, much later in the movie, when Sugar's trying to call his girlfriend again, she's not around. So actually, like, she's the one who's kind of walking out on him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, way to subvert my expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Or that scene where they're in the club in Iowa and they're dancing with these girls and you see these white jock types. And I think I even said like, uh-oh, aloud. But then they like tussle a little bit and our Dominican friends leave the club and that's that.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, there are things like Salvador, and there are things like you have the pull of New York throughout the entire movie. You know, he wants to go to New York. That's what he's talking about mm-hmm. with his girlfriend in that scene. And then Jorge is going to New York, and then he has his New York calendar that he puts up next to his window with the corn.
His favorite player is Robinson Cano, who was a Yankee at that time.
Yeah. So when the film completely pulls the rug out from under you by having him leave the team mid-season and go to New York, I was completely flabbergasted, but also I was like, oh yeah, well, you sowed all of those seeds for this to be the thing that happens.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that the movie leaves the question open to the viewer as to whether that was the right decision to make or not, which I really respect. You don't know that he was going to be cut or not. You're kind of given enough contextual evidence from Jorge, who had a knee injury and ended up getting cut, and that's why he goes to New York. But you also see people like fighting it out and making it, and also people fighting it out and not making it. And I love that it doesn't sort of spell it out for you, and you're kind of left to decide for yourself whether this was the right thing for him to do. Although I do think that the movie like tends to side with the decision that he made. And the woodworking, I don't need to get super into it, but that was the other thing that I wanted to talk about, is just like that is a thing that really tracks throughout the film. That interest is established even from the very beginning. You get mm-hmm. the sense that he is not just doing it for like his family building stuff, but that he genuinely likes doing it. There are a couple of really expertly placed shots, one after the or in the midst of the party that he is a part of before going off to spring training, where he like leaves the party for a second to go and like sort of work on some stuff, to like sand this down a little bit. And those are just dropped in every now and then to show that like there is that other interest there. There is that other passion there, and that maybe it isn't just all about baseball for him, which I think is one of the things that really he is contending with when he's faced with complete isolation eventually in Iowa, when Jorge is gone, when his like possible interest in the church girl granddaughter of his host family is not going to be interested in him, and the English is still kind of an issue, and he's in a slump.
Brad Johnson got called up to AA.
And Brad Johnson got called up to AA, yeah.
Yeah, so on this point, like as good as this film is, or actually no, like part of its excellence was it devastated me. I don't think that I breathed for the last one third of the movie, maybe the last half of the movie.
Ellen was a mess after this.
A mess. And when he was struggling to come back from his injury, I thought, I really hope that this is things going wrong in Act Four so that he can rise above it and be okay. And I think,
because that's what happens in the like happy sports movies.
That's what, like, we are led to expect from the pattern of baseball movies. But that's sort of to my point that like, I don't think this is a baseball movie in that same way. And I mean, I do think that he can rise above it and be okay is maybe arguably what does happen, but it was so hard for me to see while I was watching it. This movie made me so, so sad. I can't remember the last time a movie made me so sad. I was disconsolate afterwards. We had to like watch a John Boy video and a Last Chance Kitchen just so that I felt like I was happy enough to be able to go to bed.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I can verify that as 100% accurate. It is unexpected in a sports movie to do things kind of like contrary to what those tropes are. And I mean, I would argue that he does find a certain level of peace and contentedness, and that maybe he picked the path that was right for him at the end. But there's still an amount of sadness to it. And that's kind of what I think I was trying to say at the very beginning, which is that like it's so complex and so layered, the storytelling, that it can be both. He can find this way where he suddenly is able to still like play baseball in this rec league, which he does still love, and do the woodworking that he loves, where he gets a job or sort of comes under the wing of a guy who owns a sort of woodworking place. And he also has like a father figure out of that. He's getting all of these things that he wants, and he's still able to make money that he's sending home to his family. All of these boxes are ticked, but you still get a couple of moments where you can see just how disappointed and hurt he is that he is in this place. Like, both of those things can coexist, and the movie does such a good job of doing that.
Yeah, well, it remained a sort of a question for me, because I think while I was watching it for the first time and just experiencing it, not knowing what was going to happen, I think that some of my devastation was the tension that the film builds almost from the beginning, but definitely more and more and more as you go on. And I feel like some of the reason is my potentially false transference. So I always say that nothing is more like acting than baseball to me. Mm-hmm. And I think partly that's just because those are my two favorite things. But also there are all of these parallels that I see. And one of them, which I even put to Keith Law when we were on the podcast together, and despite of knowing that Keith Law doesn't believe in the hot hand, is the notion of seeing players go through apparent slumps feels to me the most apt metaphor for something that I feel in my own life, like in our struggle sure. to be artists. So I feel like I don't deserve to identify with the performance stress of baseball players, but it's still the central metaphor to my life and the stress of our profession. So I just do. And so the idea of walking away from it, it just guts me. Like the idea of walking away from my vocation, it is unspeakably sad to me.
Yeah.
And obviously my greatest fear in life is like losing the people that I love. But after that, it's not acting anymore. Like I'm more afraid of that than I am of death or like the Yankees winning every single World Series from now until the end of time. And so I was just thinking like, for God's sake, go back. Just because like walking away from something that feels like that feels worse than death would be worse than death to me.
Okay, but what
and,
I would...
And just let me finish, sorry. And I'm remembering the scene early with his uncle in the movie where he's like, baseball only gives you one chance. And I just, when I was watching it, I was just thinking anything would be better than this. But then I realized maybe it's not that for him. Like the thing that I'm most grateful for in all of my lifetime is that I have enough privilege that I can think about having a vocation and not just doing something to survive because it's the only thing that there is for me to do. And so like pitching, maybe it was his calling. You know, he says he wanted to be a pitcher from when he was 11, but maybe it's just his way out, like you were talking about, to make a living. And maybe it's my privilege that makes me think of this as a tragedy, but like he's still getting to New York and that's what he wanted to do the whole time. And he's still sending money to his parents and he's found his community.
The thing that I want to say is that like he's still playing baseball also. And that's like the one thing that's a little bit different. Like I feel like the acting equivalent from, because he's not walking away from baseball. He's maybe walking away from a professional sports career, sure. But like baseball is still in his life. And I feel like if you are an actor who is like maybe potentially going to like go on and get a series, be a lead in a thing, maybe you'll win an Oscar one day, whatever. Like I don't feel like the equivalent would sort of be to me to go and work in like community theater or something like that. Like it's still a part of your life. I think it's the grind and the single-mindedness of it that he was walking away from. I don't think that he was a single-minded person. I don't know. But then there's also Brad, who is the Stanford graduate who I think is sort of shown as being someone who is a non-immigrant and has a lot of advantage just through understanding the world that he's in. He doesn't mm-hmm. have these whole extra set of hurdles that Dominican and other international players have. So at the very end of the film, obviously he would rather be an ace starter for a baseball team. I think that he's just had a little bit of this like growing up and being like, oh, I guess I wasn't going to get that, but I can still have baseball in my life. And I also have found a way to do all of these other things also. So it's bittersweet, but I didn't find it tragic personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the point that I was trying to get to, is that like by the very end of the movie, you see that he's playing baseball again. And I immediately feel so much better just knowing that like he's playing baseball. And then there's also that like perhaps the best montage we have yet seen.
Ooh.
Of all of the different players in yeah. his like rec league, all being former prospects, you know, naming their different organizations. And you're like, oh, this is actually his community. These are the people that he belongs with, are the people who wanted to come to New York. This is the place where they wanted to live.
Yeah.
And they're still getting to do the thing that they love, and they're still able to work and send money to their family. It's not like the grandest of their dreams where they were making $1 million and could buy their mama a house with a swimming pool, but it's good enough.
Yeah.
But my experience of watching the movie before I got to that point, before I sort of like realized why I was so miserable and that it was a kind of a false transference that I was doing,
mm-hmm.
that's where the movie took me, I guess, until we got to that final moment.
Yeah. I totally agree with you about that montage. And it's such a great like contrast to the one towards the beginning at his kind of like going away party.
The everybody remember me, remember me.
Everybody like, I'm your cousin, I'm your aunt, I'm your uncle. Oh yeah, no, come on. Like, they're filmed in very, very similar ways. They're meant to be kind of juxtaposed, I think. And there's a certain sadness behind all of these players saying like, I was with the Yankees, I was with the Brewers, all of that. There's even a moment where Sugar and another one of the players realized that they stayed at the same house in Davenport. They were like, oh, the Higgins? Yeah, the Higgins. And it's beautiful. And there's a certain sadness to it, but there's like comfort to it there too. There's support. Like he's got a community. He finds a community, which is the thing that he was missing for so much of his time. And so much of this is just like the roll of the dice, right? Because he says that there are people, he's like talk when he's still in contact with his girlfriend, he's talking about how there are some players that didn't get sent to Iowa. They got sent to like somewhere in the Southwest where there are people who speak Spanish and they're able, that might have been with his sister, I'm not sure.
No, that was a conversation with his girlfriend, yeah.
And obviously, if you're a Spanish-speaking player and you're going to be starting your career in the United States in a section of the country where there's a higher Latin population, that's going to make certain things so much easier. And like, this made me think so much, this whole movie made me think so much about all of the crazy hardships, because there are so many different variables that any number of players from any number of countries have to face. The challenge on top of the challenge on top of the challenge is such a huge part of it. And this movie tells that story so well, I think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, not only am I deeply admiring of the way that Bowden and Fleck tell this story, but the way I'm just deeply grateful for the way they immerse you in the difficulty of going to a new country for work, for an insanely competitive work where you don't speak the language. You know, the storytelling around the language barrier is so excellent, and it immerses you in the tension and the expectation to perform. And in the baseball sequences, I have never before so clearly felt the intense stress of those moments. So like, ultimately, my takeaway from this was, as much as I have this kind of sympathy or empathy, I don't deserve to have that sympathy or empathy, particularly not with like Dominican players or anybody who comes from another country here. Because there's just, as you were saying, there's just like the layer upon layer upon layer of difficulty. And I'm so grateful for having been able to, by watching the movie, inhabit the lives that they lead, you know, yeah, of like yeah. all of these Dominican players that I have loved, you know, forever. And like my newest baseball boyfriend is Ketel Marte, and he's
go.
Dominican. And I just feel like I am grateful for the tiny, tiny window into what that might be like that this film allows us.
Yeah. A couple of threads that I want to point out. The French toast and the eggs.
Really good.
Oh my God. So when they are first at spring training, they go to a diner. This is a lot of the players who knew each other from this academy in the Dominican Republic. They all get together, and there is one player who's sort of like, it's Jorge, right? Who has
yes.
been there before.
Yes.
He's like, he knows the stuff. And he orders French toast from the diner. Nobody else really speaks English, so they also all order French toast. It's adorable. And then you cut to later, Sugar, he's only ordering French toast. Again, this is like the English thing, right? Like, how much is he learning? What does he know? This was constantly a question for me in the film. And there's like a moment where he tries to order eggs and like gets a little frustrated because he's not able to answer or understand the question of like how he wants them prepared. He reverts back to French toast, and the very lovely waitress brings him French toast and also brings him several different preparations of eggs and tries to like teach him those preparations. And then like later in the film, we cut to a scene with him and Jorge eating, and he's just eating some sunny side up eggs with toast. It's moments like mm-hmm. that where so much story is being told without actually having to explain it to you, without having to like dumb it down. And I think that there are like so many versions of that particular thread throughout this film where you're just following these little micro narratives throughout.
Yeah, another sequence that I really, really liked was when they're on the road in some kind of hotel, and his roommate, I think Jorge, is having some conversation on the phone about
yeah.
how it's not going well for him. And so he decides to leave. You feel like it's an act of giving Jorge some privacy.
Right,
and
right.
then he's walking through. You don't ever quite see what it is.
It's like kind of an arcade.
It looks like an arcade
entertainment
and then
place.
Like a restaurant. And he's really the only thing in focus against this like incredibly long tracking shot.
Yeah, it's the longest shot in the film.
Against this like out of focus American consumption. And then finally he gets to where he's going and he sees Brad Johnson bowling with friends. And then yeah. he just turns around and leaves because he's like, I don't belong here either.
Yeah.
And so like storytelling wise, the way that they use the cinematography to tell that story was also just exceptional.
Yeah.
It was like, it was 80 grade storytelling.
I go back also to his, like there are moments where it seems like he's not learning English as well as some other people and moments where it seems like his English is coming along really well. It was something that stuck with me, so that there's a brief moment where he's slumping and kind of spiraling down and in despair where he gets some pills off of somebody. And the guy who gives them to him is like, it's really important that you just take half a pill. And I was like, did he understand that? Because then you go into the game and he's pitching really well. And then he like throws a pitch that is like maybe throwing at the batter or maybe just like a wild pitch because he seems sort of disoriented.
Well, you see him take like two of the pills.
Yeah, yeah. So that happened then because he didn't understand what the person was telling him about. Like, it's not okay that he was taking those drugs, but like he collapsed, like I think as a result of taking too many, and that threw him off. And I guess what I'm really pointing out here is that this is really complicated storytelling that doesn't necessarily have like a clear moral arc to it, that doesn't have like, I don't know, easy answers.
Yeah, well, I actually thought that was ambiguous, and maybe you did as well, where maybe he was like, screw that, I'm just going to take all these pills. I really need this start to go better.
I just assumed he didn't even understand what the guy was saying.
Yeah, I guess because I feel like that had already been after the scene, the sweet scene with him and Grandma Higgins, where she was like, your English is much better.
Yeah, but I can't remember. That was sort of close to the scene where they were with the... where he was with the manager and he was like, you're talking too fast for me.
Yeah.
I don't understand. And he was saying that in Spanish. Oh, that seems so good. Cause the manager's like, he totally knows what Sugar is going through, but like he also doesn't. And he can't even communicate effectively the extent to which he can.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm so glad that the movie didn't become that Sugar kept on using some kind of PEDs and then got caught.
Totally.
I was terrified that that's what the movie was going to turn into. I'm so glad that it didn't.
Yeah, me too. It's a quick little segment of the film, but it does feel appropriate because I think that a lot of the story of the movie is like this desperation that players feel to keep their head above water and mm-hmm. continue being a part of these organizations and hopefully even moving up in these organizations. And yeah, there's like a level of desperation with that. And so even though that wasn't the point of this story, including it a little bit seemed wholly appropriate.
Oh, so glad that it was in there. Can we move along to our next segment?
Yeah, there might be a little interjection here or there, but I feel like I'm ready to move on.
So our next tool is score. And there's not much of a score, but I think that the music direction and like choice of songs used is really wonderful. So many of them really made me want to dance. So I'm going to go 60.
I also have a 60.
Yeah, we agree.
I think it's somewhat light on music. It doesn't have like a ton of like original composition as far as I can remember. But I think that the music that's in it is really good.
And always added so much for me.
Yeah, it's very thoughtfully done.
Moving along to our next tool. What about acting? What you got?
I have a 70. That's where I'm at. I think that it is really, really, really good. I had a little bit of a temptation to like go all the way with it, but I think there were like a couple of little things that were holding me back, and some of which might actually even be like storytelling actually related. But yeah, I feel comfortable at 70. Where are you at?
I feel like Jim is already not going to believe this when I fax it in, so I'm going 80. Like, was there
Jim
any moment when I did not 100% believe that those actors were those people? There was not. Like, there was not, we're not even talking about doing a good job of acting. I believed those actors were those people 100% of the time, so I don't know what else to do.
There's something... I think that, again, Alhenis Perez Soto, who played Sugar, is so good. There was something leading up to his decision to leave that I was kind of like, if this were not a first-time person perform, like, would I have gotten a little bit more? Because I think that when we first saw this film, that moment is such a twist. And it took me a little bit by surprise, and I wondered if that was a storytelling thing or an acting thing. I guess I ultimately came down on the side of like an acting thing, but maybe it's a storytelling thing. I don't know. But that is one of the things in my mind about it.
It completely took me by surprise. And I imagined that that was what they intended.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong, but I was like, what a twist. Do you know what I mean? It felt like that is part of what makes the film so good, is that then when it's happening, you're like, oh no, right. You sowed all of the seeds for this to happen. And at the same time, I was completely surprised. And I really, like, that's actually all that I think I crave, is to not be able to predict what the next scene is going to be. Because so often I'm watching something and I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I know then the next scene is going to be this, and this is going to be the event of that scene. And then there's going to be a scene where this happens. And I love it in general when that doesn't happen. Of course, I was devastated by the fact that I thought he was walking away from baseball. But like, I guess I didn't have that problem because I thought it was intentional. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just like creating something out of what I received.
I think that he is so good, but I felt like the thing that he was good at did not necessarily include showing us in some way. Like, I didn't see a guy getting to that place where he was just going to walk away from it. I didn't see that pressure building. I think I saw the direction and the editing telling that story, but I don't know that I saw the acting tell that story in those moments. And I think that that's okay because the movie still told that story, but that's what is, I think, keeping me from being like, oh, this is Hall of Fame. I'm like, this is really good. Like, it's still like plus plus, but that is what, yeah, keeps it out of the Hall of Fame for me.
I actually think I might change the score here because 270, because I think what I admired so much was just the absolute uniformity of the realness of everybody in this. And yeah. I think that that's actually direction. And granted, like, a director can contribute to a wonderful acting performance and you would still say, oh, that is an 80 grade performance or a 70 grade performance or whatever. I love that I'm saying this now as if that's the industry standard. But I think that
73, baby.
Because I think that the acting is so good, but I think that it's very clear to me watching it that what makes it so good is the direction. And since direction is more a part of storytelling, I think maybe it's only fair that I so I'm just going to scratch this one out and Jim will be grateful.
Oh my God, I think this is the first time you've changed a score.
It is the first time I've changed a score.
Momentous! There are so many like things that I wish I could talk about and point out. I really just want to say, like, there's so many amazing performances in this.
They're literally all good.
The manager, again, that moment that I mentioned earlier where you could see him feeling for Sugar, but like knowing that he can't really like reach to where he needs to, like the attempt to convey empathy, but knowing that it's not necessarily working, was amazing. Osvaldo.
Oh, so good.
My God. He's amazing.
Jamie Tirelli. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, 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 so good. The elderly couple that host the Higgins,
they're really great.
Good. They're so good. This like old couple that hosts Players and loves baseball. They're perfect.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it, but I also feel that way about the announcer. I was just like, this is just right. Anyway.
So let's move along to our next tool, which is delightfulness of catcher character. And I'm going to go 50 here. I feel like Sugar can't have a super delightful catcher because it just wouldn't allow him to be isolated. Like, your catcher is supposed to be your best friend and your roommate and your pal. I don't remember exactly what he said in
It Happens Every Spring.
But yes, that's supposed to be your catcher. And I think that this catcher does a great job of being a catcher. I think perhaps my favorite moment is when he's translating in the interview with Sugar and translating just like a little poorly in both directions. So basically it's a wonderful scene about like these two people are not having a conversation.
Yeah.
Because
it's, again, amazing storytelling.
It's amazing storytelling. And also you learn a new thing about Miguel that you didn't know before, about how young he was when he thought that he was going to be a pitcher. And then when he has taken the drugs, the catcher does come out to the mound and tell him the thing that he needs to hear. And then he protects him in the fight that comes after that. So I feel like a good solid major league amount of being a catcher.
I went 60, but for basically the same reasons. I was like, oh, he's translating. He's supportive. When Sugar throws that pitch, that sort of wild pitch that he gets thrown out for, whether it was intentional or not, there's this bench clearing brawl that happens, and it all kind of starts when this lovely catcher sort of gets in between the batter and Sugar and gets taken down to the ground in the scuffle. And yeah, I don't think that he is like the greatest catcher ever, but I found him to be above average.
That's fair. That's totally fair. So what about the delightfulness of announcer? You alluded to this earlier.
Well, I'm going to go with a 60 on this. And I think that it's, again, I think that he's above average. It's not very showy. It is not like the Bob Uecker movie announcer. It's not that type of thing. It's not trying to be. It's trying to be real. And it feels very real to me. He is like someone who looks, sounds, and acts like a broadcaster in like minor league baseball. I love that moment, the moment that you were describing of the translation issue in the post-game interview.
And he's totally like blank blink at the end when he realizes that basically like communication has not happened.
Yeah, but he also does it, in my opinion, it was not completely blank. I felt like there was a certain kind of like kind understanding that he was sort of like offering up there, where he was sort of like, oh, I get it. Yeah, okay. And like all of that together just made me be like, you know, like I like you. I would feel lucky to have you as an announcer here.
That's so interesting. I felt like that moment was a total The Office style take.
Oh, okay.
Like that's sort of how it felt to me. But maybe from your more affable denizens of The Office. So like Jim just being like, okay, bringing it back around to Jim. So I think for all of the same reasons, I just decided to go 50 again.
Okay.
And I feel like the announcer is bland, but in a way that is delightful because it's real bland. It fits. So I felt myself enjoying it because of that. And I feel like I could go 55 too, but I don't know that I'd go above that myself. Okay. So our next tool is lack of misogyny. And I decided 60?
Yeah.
I almost went 55, but I think it's just that it's Sugar's movie. And so the fact that there isn't a sort of a large female role in this, there isn't really any other very large role in the movie. But as you pointed out, his like Grandma Higgins is very knowledgeable about baseball.
Yeah, she like, knows her stuff.
And like baseball mechanics.
And the granddaughter that he's like kind of interested in for a second, she seems like a very like smart, sweet person. Like they don't match up together and it's disappointing for Sugar, but in no way is misogyny portrayed in that interaction.
Yes, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also like with his family and the people there.
His sister is awesome.
They're all like supportive, nice, smart, kind people.
Yeah.
I have the same score.
And the female server who gave him the eggs.
Oh my God.
You gotta love her so much.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel like when he has that conversation with Sophia about his friend in Arizona having, you know, 15 girlfriends, groupies, and they determine that his friend is lying about it, like she's justifiably put off by that conversation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just feel like all the female characters are very, even if they are not very large roles, they're very well-rounded and believable, and as one might hope, given that half of the writing directing team is female.
Absolutely.
So now we're going to move along to my favorite segment, Yes or No. Would this movie be better with Kevin Costner in it?
Nah.
Nah.
Nah, it's not that kind of a movie. I thought, like, where, if I had to put him in there, he could
be the swing coach.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want him. Like, I actually very much, I mean, I think that, and I don't know the name of the actor and I feel bad, but the actor who plays the coach is so good. And I like the sort of un-Hollywood nature of him. He just seems like a real minor league coach.
The note that I put under this category was like, I like that there aren't really famous people in this movie. I mean, like, Andre Holland is like kind of famous now, but he wasn't in 2008. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So next question, does this movie reference Babe Ruth?
It does.
It does.
Yeah.
So when Brad and Miguel are talking on the bus about their favorite players, this is when Miguel initially says that his favorite player is Robinson Cano, and Brad says that his favorite player is Roberto Clemente. And then Brad asks him if he knows who Babe Ruth is, and Miguel pretends to not know who he is. He says, like, wait, like the candy bar? But it's a joke.
Yeah. It's a very sweet little moment that they have.
Oh,
yeah.
God, I love those scenes they have together.
Yeah, no, the fact that their friendship does not get to continue developing is like one of the sadder parts of the movie for me.
Is there a dog?
Was there a dog?
I don't think I saw a dog.
I don't remember seeing a dog. And when I watched it again, I was like, I'm going to look for a dog. And then at the end of it, I was like, wait, did I look away when the dog came on?
I feel like I forgot to look for a dog because that's what this movie did for me. And I want to fall back on the fact that I'm very much a dog about seeing dogs.
Yeah.
Like, we were watching McMillions and there's a video of somebody and like a dog in the deep background, like goes down one set of stairs. And I was like, there's a dog there. So I would like to believe that I correctly assessed this as a dogless film. But if you, dear listener, have found a dog in this film, please let us know that we're wrong. Next question. Are Yankees fans the main antagonist of this film?
No. They're not.
But Jorge does tell him that Yankees fans are loco.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, Jorge has been cut and he says that he'll see Sugar, you know, when the Knights come and play the Yankees. And then he says, but, you know, I'm not going to be rooting for you because Yankees fans are crazy. Like it wouldn't be cool for Jorge to root against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium because, like, we all know how Yankees fans are. I appreciated that. But it seems like this is more a movie where the villainy has to do with a much more complicated series of circumstances relating to the difficulties of being an immigrant in an industry that is already insanely demanding.
Any really good film, the antagonist is the machine.
Yeah.
So our next segment is 6 Degrees of Baseball. And Andre Holland, who we were just talking about, who I feel like is one of my favorite actors.
He's amazing.
I love Andre Holland.
And like such
so
a nice
much.
Guy, too.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So he is also in 42. He plays Wendell Smith, the journalist.
Yeah. And 42 is great. We're definitely going to be doing that one in the future.
Hopefully we're going to be doing all of them, or at least all of the good ones. Did you have a favorite moment?
I think I picked this like slightly arbitrarily because I love so much of the movie. I picked like the French toast scenes because I think that they were really dense in storytelling in terms of like what was going on, what his experience was like. This is the sequence of him first ordering it. This is him being like, wow, American food is really sweet because like all he's been eating is French toast, which I've been there, Sugar, like, and it's really good for a while. And then you're like, oh my God. And I felt that way at a moment where I had zero athletic or fitness ambitions at all. So to be doing that while also being a professional baseball player is crazy. But the sequence of those scenes leading into like how to order eggs, I think is maybe my favorite. What about you?
Sidebar, important question that was once posed to me. Rank these breakfast foods. Waffles, pancakes, French toast.
Oh man, I think I'm gonna go pancakes, French toast, waffles. I know that cuts to the bone for you, probably.
Yeah, no, because waffles, pancakes, French toast is exactly how I would rank them. So my favorite moment, I also thought of the server giving him the eggs. I really loved that moment. And I also thought of the moment that I mentioned earlier, that sort of like long tracking shot of him against a backdrop of out of focus American consumption. But I'm going to pick a moment that we just haven't talked about yet. Again, I could pick practically any moment in this movie. I love when they're first in the motel in Arizona and they're like, look at this. There's beer in the fridge.
Oh,
and then they
yeah.
find the like pay-per-view porn and the way like all of the guys just kind of like shut down and they're are like, just standing around the TV looking at the porn.
Watching that porn.
And then in the following scene when Jorge is like, no, don't drink the beer that's in that refrigerator. It's very expensive. Buy your beer at the 7-Eleven or whatever.
Yeah, because he knows.
Get your titty mags
he's been
at
there.
The 7-Eleven. Yeah, it's really great. Did you have a least favorite moment of this film?
I thought about it, and I don't know that I do.
I don't have one either. I thought maybe we would talk about this movie, and I would be like, oh, yeah, well, I guess that moment, I guess I liked it less than the other moments. But there's not one, so yeah.
I mean, it's like a little bit of a cop out, but it's true.
But it's true. I don't want to force something. And similarly, like, I don't have a scene that I would have liked to see that I didn't see. Like, I love the scenes so much between, and just, it could be because I just love Andre Holland so much. I loved the scenes between Miguel and Brad so much, but I feel like we got that really nice scene on the bus. We got the like lovely scene where Sugar's asking him what would he do if he weren't playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what other scene I would be able to dream up that would be real.
I mean, the thing that I wrote down is that I just loved it so much. There are any number of scenes that I would have been like, oh, that could have been a longer scene for me. I think it's done really well, but this is a 2-hour-ish film, I think maybe like slightly under that, that I would be totally here for the 2.5-hour version of.
Oh, yeah, same. Yeah, there are a lot of smart, quick edits, though.
Yeah, oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just like, here we are, and then all of a sudden, we're looking out of an airplane window. Great.
And to be clear, this is not the same as, like, Eight Men Out, where it's like, there's so much being presented that I almost wish it were expanded over this long period of time. That would be fine with this, but I think that the storytelling is good and smooth and, like, all of that is great. It's really just, I loved being in this world and with these people so long that I wouldn't have minded being there longer.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Dreamiest player?
I mean, I feel like, can it be anybody other than Sugar?
I feel like it could be Brad.
It could be Brad, and he is very dreamy because he was also a history major, and I guess that's,
yeah.
You know, he's...
He's kind. He's got that,
he's
like...
He's very kind.
He's got that Andre Holland charm working for him.
But you also get the sense that, like, he's bound for the majors. And so if it's sort of, like, dreamiest player, he's probably going to be a star shortstop.
And he does represent a level of privilege that is completely alien to Sugar.
Yeah, so it feels like that could be the answer, but also it can't be the answer. It has to be our hero.
Also, like, Sugar is, like, interesting and cool and, like, super charming and good-looking. Yeah, he is a good-looking guy.
He's very handsome, yes.
And
I mean, they're both handsome.
Yeah.
More scenes with both of them, please.
And I would put that as my favorite performance also.
Alanis?
Yeah, I think so.
Same. Yeah, I feel like it is so much his movie, and he's so wonderful in it. I feel like he conveys so much without saying anything. And again, there's not a performance in this movie that I didn't like. I feel like Jamie Turrelli as Osvaldo might get sort of runner-up favorite performance, but...
Oh my God, he was great. Yeah.
So good.
This is a movie that needs to be seen by more people.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think that my previous grades, my entire idea has been that we're scoring against other baseball movies. So saying that A League of Their Own has 80 grade storytelling, I think is completely true when ranked amongst other baseball movies. And
yeah,
like, as much as it's one of my favorite movies of all time, like, perhaps not in the entire history of cinema, but this is just such a good movie.
Oh, God.
It's just an exceptional movie. So if for some reason you've listened to this without having seen it, we really recommend that you go see it.
Yeah, 100%.
And for a complete change of pace, next week we are going to be talking about Rookie of the Year. We're going to be talking about somebody who made it to the majors.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Funky Butt Lovin'.
If you would like to find us on the social medias between now and then, my Twitter handle is at Ellen_Adair, and I'm on Instagram at EllenAdairG.
And I am at Eric Gildee at both of those things, GILDE, I think. I'm on both of those things. I haven't actually verified my handle on it.
Well, it's what you've said every other week, so I take it to be true.
I think it's true.
And thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you do enjoy it, please share it with a friend that you think might also enjoy it and perhaps is starved for baseball in this world. And rate and review us if you haven't done so.
Especially if you liked it.
Especially if you liked it.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess that's a point that could be made. But again, thank you so much for tuning in to take me into the ball game, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
All right.